Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble and Doug Etty-Bay, and delighted to welcome back to the show this evening Dr. Margaret Sutherland from the University of Glasgow. And this evening we're going to be talking around inclusive education. Welcome back to EduTalk, Margaret.
Thank you very much, David. It's great to be back.
Yeah, and this is the last show of 2014, and just looking forward this time to talking about a different aspect of Margaret's work. And if listeners maybe never heard you earlier on in the year, Margaret, could you just give us a brief background to your career in education?
To
your career in education.
Oh, my career. Sorry, I missed the word career. Yes, the last time I was particularly talking about young children with high ability, the kind of 2-year-olds that can read and so on, or children that are performing way ahead of where you might expect them to be. And I guess I came into that area, and indeed into the whole area of inclusive education, through my background as a primary teacher. And just through working with children in my class and realising just what I'm doing is just not meeting their needs, and I really need to think about what I'm going to do here to support them and help them. And through that became a behaviour support teacher, worked with psychological services for a while, and then became very interested with these children who are working, as I say, ahead of their chronological peers, but also just interested in children that make you have to think really hard about how you teach. And so I guess that's why I've and how I've come into that whole area of inclusive education.
Okay, that's great. And if there's people working hard in their professional learning in the last week of term, then you can get in touch with any comments or questions for Margaret. And there's two ways that you can get in touch with the show. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk. Now, you're really interested on a personal level, Margaret, to hear more about the professional learning programmes around inclusive education that you're running at Glasgow University. And I understand that there's a variety of kind of study approaches available in terms of timescales, but I'm obviously kind of more interested in some of the areas that you go into. So I know that's a really big question, but could you give us an introduction and, you know, tell us a bit about how the programme's going and the effect it's having on classroom practitioners?
Certainly, yes. Well, we've been running this programme for a long time. In fact, I actually did, when it was we ran a diploma, I actually did it as a classroom teacher at one point years and years ago. And obviously, the content has changed, as ideas have changed, as legislation has changed, and as we've started to learn more about how we learn, the course has changed. But it's a long-standing, long-running programme, and we've had a very great number of teachers in Scotland have passed through our hands, as it were. And it runs as a certificate. We have a certificate in inclusive education, research policy and practice. We have a diploma, which you can build on your credits and do a diploma. And you can actually take your credits from the diploma. And a number of people have done this over the last few years and have come and completed a master's in inclusive education with us. So there's a kind of an incremental approach to this, if you wish. Or, of course, you can also do the master's with us straight off as well. So a variety of ways, and certainly in terms of content, it's very varied. There are some core courses that we expect you to take, but there are also some option courses, and indeed through it, people can come with a particular interest and study that interest in these broader contexts. So, for example, our first course is called The Evolving Concept of Inclusion, because I think there's often perhaps some misconception around as to what inclusion is or isn't. And so we look at some of the history of that, where we've been, where we are, and where we might be going. And we look at it, too, in the context of the international legislation that's around, because much of the policy that we have here in Scotland wasn't just thought up by somebody sitting in Victoria Quay, but is actually influenced by these bigger education initiatives around the world. And so we look at it globally, and we look at it locally and nationally, and then locally, and then in your actual classroom, what does it mean? And so you could come perhaps really interested in children who are highly able or children who are autistic, and have that sort of thread that runs through each of the courses. Another core course is the learner and the curriculum. And as that suggests, it looks at learners and it looks at curriculum. And obviously, with Curriculum for Excellence coming on stream in the last few years, it's a great opportunity to come and really get into what is a curriculum. What can it be? What should it be? And looking at some of the theory behind curriculum theory and looking at that in the light of Curriculum for Excellence in a Scottish context and looking at other curriculum as well across internationally too. So in early years, for example, we might also touch on Reggio Emilia. We might look at Te Whariki from New Zealand and then compare that with what we're doing here in Scotland as well. And again, if I'm still interested in autism, then I can look at it through that lens. And then we have a number of option courses that people can do as well. Does that answer some of that question?
That sounds fantastic. And I think I did a sounds similar, although it'd probably be out of date now. It was that long ago, but I did an inclusive and special education course way back in the day at Edinburgh University. So it was just take me back listening to some of the names you were throwing about there. What kind of educationalists are coming on to the course then? And what kind of, you were saying about autism, you know, and that's certainly a big matter now, and the increasing need for awareness. And real skills among the workforce. What other reasons are people coming onto the course?
Yeah, I think for me that's actually one of the really exciting bits is working with a whole range of teachers that come in our courses. Excuse me. And we have teachers from nursery schools, preschools. Excuse me. We have also have teachers who are class committed in primary and in secondary. So we have subject teachers. We have teachers who have particular responsibility for children with additional support for learning. We have teachers who are working in units, perhaps attached to a mainstream school. Some of them are working in schools for children with severe and complex learning difficulties. So a whole range, and in fact this year we have some people from further education. So they're working in the area of additional support but within an FE sector. And actually that mix of people and backgrounds is fascinating when you start to actually talk about the issues that we're all dealing with, but in all these different contexts. And also we're very privileged within the University of Glasgow to have a number of international students. So we have students from India, from Botswana, we've had students from Peru, from Chile, from various parts of Africa, and a number of Chinese students too. And that again brings just a real different dimension that has really enriched our course, I think, excuse me, at Glasgow.
And another big question, Margaret, you mentioned that the title of the first course is Evolving Concept of Inclusion. So maybe I talk about my own studies, say, 10, 11 years ago. How has the concept of inclusion, particularly within the Scottish context, how has it evolved in recent years?
Well, I would say one of the big turning points, I guess, in Scottish education was in the year 2000 when we had the Standards in Scotland Schools, etc. Act. The title of that act never fails to bring a smile to my face with the words etc. But anyway, and that was, of course, the act that started to talk about this idea of the presumption of mainstream schooling. Now, it doesn't actually say close down special schools and throw everybody into mainstream. That's not, I don't think, what that act said. But it did talk about this presumption of going to your local mainstream school where it was possible. And I think it was at that point, really, that we started to see a number of children who may have automatically gone to what would have then been called, I suppose, a special school, actually appearing in mainstream classes. I think it's quite interesting, though, if you look at the numbers, the statistics for mainstream schools and for special schools, special in inverted commas, the numbers have remained quite static. And yet, talking to teachers, it does seem that a number of the children now in these schools often have some behaviour issues. and children who would have normally gone there are now in mainstream school. Autism, of course, as you've already mentioned, is another label that we hear mentioned quite a lot too. So I think inclusion, I think we're still grappling with it. I wonder if it's a thing that we ever get to or if it's in fact a journey that we're on. And I certainly think there are examples of schools who are certainly trying to become more inclusive by the way they organise themselves for learning, organise the pupils for learning, the way they engage pupils in learning. So I think that there's been, I think inclusion is a journey that we're on, and I think we're certainly well on the way down that road. And I think also compared perhaps to some other countries where we, because in 2004, I think, was the other big, I guess, turning point 10 years ago when the Additional Support for Learning Act kicked in, and we really stopped talking about special educational needs. And it wasn't just a change of words, but a change, a philosophical change in how we understood the idea of needing support and that what that support might look like. And, of course, for us in the Scottish Network for Able Pupils, we were delighted because this reconceptualisation of who might need support meant that, for example, highly able pupils are considered. Children who are bereaved are considered, that if you break your arm and you're right-handed and you've got a plaster on, well, for 6 weeks you might, while you've got the plaster on, have an additional need for additional support. So I think that act was really helpful and really helped to move Scotland forward, I would say quite dramatically compared to many countries. I was actually in Slovenia a couple of weeks ago talking about high-level pupils, but within the context of Scottish education. And there was real interest from Italy, Slovenia, Switzerland, Croatia, going, that's a great way to think about additional support. So I think Scotland has, I think Scotland's leading the way in many ways within this area.
And would you say that there's sufficient support for classroom teachers in terms of grappling with their very often legal requirements or quasi-legal requirements? I mean, you talked about the acts there, and of course we've got the Children and Young People Scotland Act as well this year, so which you might want to mention, you might want to kind of raise awareness for teachers that are listening. So there's that, but as I say, what kind of supports are available, and how crucial is it for teachers who are working with pupils with additional support needs to actually engage with what you're involved in with, Margaret, very deep professional learning?
Well, I think I'm not pretending for a minute that any of this is easy, because I don't think it is easy. And I do have concern just now. I think that budget cuts are last year, this year, I think they are hitting additional support for learning. And there was a time when budget cuts didn't seem to be protected, but additional support for learning is being hit this time in these budget cuts. And as, you know, the kind of salami slicing goes on, I'm concerned. I'm concerned for all children, and certainly for children who are currently receiving additional support. Having said all of that, I think there's a lot a teacher can do, but I don't think a teacher can do all. And I think it has to be about layers of support. And I think teachers have to know where they can go for that next bit of support once they have and are doing all they can in their classroom. And I guess the kind of courses that we run, the programme that we run at Glasgow, and indeed we work very closely with, in fact I was at a meeting on Friday with all the teacher education institutions who are working in the area of inclusion and additional support. And we all, through our courses, we'd be helping teachers to engage with practice and theory and policy, and bringing these three things together to see how we can best support learners. And I think when you start to get back to talking about things that teachers are interested in, and most teachers, certainly, I've really not come across a Scottish teacher who's not interested in teaching and learning. And I think you can really hook teachers in when you start to say, let's talk about something that matters. Let's talk about teaching and learning. And I think when you start talking about children and needs and learning and how you support that learning, I mean, I have a teacher say to me at the end of a course, saying, "Oh, you've reignited," well, not me, but what we've done has reignited my passion for teaching. And I think one of the things is you can get quite ground down in your classroom sometimes. And I think just to have that time to just to step aside and to actually start to say, why am I doing that? Why, you know, does this work? Why did it work this year? And why did it not work last year? And having a good educational reason for doing what you're doing can actually really quite reinvigorate people, I think.
So you're bringing together the theory and the reflection.
I think for me that's a crucial part in our courses. I personally think that theory without practice is maybe actually a bit useless. But I actually think practice without theory might be dangerous. And I think we need to bring that together. And I think very much even in our initial teacher education courses too, that we're very much getting students to say, you know, it's not this is the bit you do at university, the theory, and this is the good fun bit, and this is where you really learn to be a teacher in school. For me, it doesn't work like that. These two bits have to work together and in synergy with each other. And I believe strongly that we'll enrich both of those places if we work together.
Now, with that in mind, I think we'll bring in a couple of questions from, we've got Paul Campbell, who's at P. Campbell91 on Twitter. Both questions that Paul's posing on Twitter at the moment are kind of related, so I'll offer you both of the questions, Margaret, and maybe you can answer one or both.
So
Paul's asking, yeah, they're biggies again, putting you on the spot. So Paul's asking, in your opinion, what should primary teachers prioritise in the first few weeks of the school year when they are making initial assessments? So I'll leave that with you for a moment.
Yep.
The second question, what mechanisms would you want to see employed in all primary classrooms that would facilitate meeting all needs in the class?
Oh, okay. Nothing small there then, eh? thank you for that, Paul. I can see you. I've just got you up here on Twitter myself, so I'm just following that. What should primary teachers prioritise in the first few weeks of school? Well, I think actually one of the things I would prioritise, I hope one of the things I did prioritise when I was in primary schools teaching, was actually getting to know my pupils, forming strong relationships with them. Pupils learn from people they trust. They don't necessarily need to like you, but they need to trust you. And I do think you need to build up that trust. And I think that's really quite an important thing to be building up in that first few weeks of the setting out your classroom ethos, getting your classroom ethos right, that the pupils know that you have high expectations for them all, not unrealistic, but high expectations for them, that you care about them, that you want to learn with them and from them, and to help them learn as well. And I think that all that kind of thing is incredibly important. And obviously, you know, a child comes into you new, but they've done a lot of learning before they get to you. And I think finding out where they are in their learning in order that you can then start to take them forward is really an important part. But relationships, I think, are a real crucial part of teaching, and a part that I think we really need to work hard at, particularly at the beginning of a new school year. So do you think that answers Paul's first question? Maybe we'll come back on Twitter and tell us.
Absolutely. And I'm conscious of time, Margaret. We've maybe got you for about another 10 minutes or so. So I was also wanting to maybe move briefly on to the...
To the mechanisms one?
Yeah, yes.
Well, I think, in truth, for me, I don't think there's any one thing that you do in your classroom that works all the time for everybody. And I rather worry when we jump on bandwagons and say, oh, gosh, we've all got to do, you know, I don't know, cooperative learning, critical skills, what else have we had in the past? You know, any of these kind of things. Now, these are not to say that these things aren't good things to do. I'm not saying that. But any one of those things on its own will not be the recipe for sorting everybody. You know, synthetics, phonics didn't sort everybody. It does help a lot and all the rest of it. So I don't know that I think there's any one thing that we need to do. But I think we need to have a whole range of things are a range of strategies and a range of skills and a range of materials that we can pull in as and when we see that they would meet the needs of the learners that are sitting in front of us. So I'm not sure if you'll like that answer, Paul, but there we go. I'm not sure that there's any one thing that we do. There's a whole range of things I think we can do.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying about the second course, the second unit or the second module on the course that you're teaching on is around the learning the curriculum. And I'm thinking back to my own studies, and I'm sure that the kind of master's level that I was working at back then, we dipped into the idea that the curriculum or education in itself, the system, can be quite oppressive towards people with additional support needs. And is that something you go into, or is it more looking at it with a positive slant with the possibilities of curriculum for excellence, or is it a mix?
We want teachers that come in our courses to critique everything that they do. And using the curriculum and looking at the curriculum and thinking about the curriculum, we encourage them to critique that. So I think, for me, Curriculum for Excellence does offer great opportunities. I wrote a paper about how I thought Curriculum for Excellence can actually offer great opportunities for highly able children, for example. I think there's some wonderful stuff there. But it comes down to the teacher, the expertise of the teacher wanting to do things, good things for highly able pupils, thinking about highly able pupils, knowing what they think about highly able pupils, and so on and so forth. So we do encourage people to critique curriculum, whether it be Scottish curriculum, the New Zealand curriculum, or whatever curriculum. And again, it's this idea of bringing the theory and the research and the practice and the policy all together. There are issues with Curriculum for Excellence. I would think there'll be issues with whatever curriculum we had. But yes, we would certainly be encouraging critique, but also in saying, well, okay, that's perhaps some of the difficulties with it. How do we get around those difficulties? What can we do? How can we bring the practice and the theory and the research and the policy much closer together in a way that will then meet the needs of the learners that are sitting in front of us?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing for me with my background working in the residential special school with pupils with social, emotional and behavioural needs is the, and you know, the kind of disruption and disaffection that would exist at least periodically is that, you know, you have a curriculum now with the various levels, and although it's not writ large, you know, that you can, it's not difficult to find the kind of points where the pupil should be hitting the end of each of these levels. And I just think that kind of normalises a kind of steady progress through the curriculum.
Yeah.
And the pupils that I work with, that's just not possible for
not
them.
Not works, yeah. I mean, I suppose I was a wee bit... I mean, I think the experiences are wonderful. I suppose what I was a wee bit disappointed with was that we put outcomes on them. Because I suppose what worries me is that we just teach an outcome rather than saying, well, what is possible here? How far can we go? Let's just keep going. That's perhaps would be one comment I would make. We do have, you were talking about your children, young people with behaviour issues, and we do actually have one of our specialist courses is around identities, relationships and behaviour. We used to call it social emotional behavioural difficulties, but we've kind of changed the terminology and the title now is identities, relationships and behaviour. And that course very much looks at young people and at curriculum and at various theories of behaviour and so on, and thinking about how we can support young people for whom life is sometimes challenging, and school is a part of that as well. The other kind of specialist courses we have are, the other one is developing literacy, and that is not just about reading, but it is this whole idea of literacy in its broadest sense, different kinds of literacies, some work on moving image education as well. George Head has done a lot of work with Creative Scotland on that, and that idea that, you know, young people are now engaging with literacy in a whole variety of different ways. We also look at one called Inclusive Classrooms, Inclusive Pedagogies, which is that idea of, well, what can I do? What does inclusive pedagogy look like? And we discuss labels and labelling theory, and we look at some of the commonalities across the labels, when actually you realise you could assign about 3 labels to every child sometimes, because there's big crossovers in the characteristics. And then we also have the high label learner as another option course as well. But through all of that, we're kind of constantly linking back to what's happening in the classroom. I'm just looking here, we've got a couple of comments from teachers that did our courses last year. Somebody said, it is with a surprising shift in practice and a renewed sense of confidence that I commence a new academic year. And we were pretty pleased with that as somebody's comment at the end of one of our courses.
I would imagine for many teachers, working with pupils in these areas, that there is often a need to just gain background knowledge, to gain an insight, to understand policy and other practices, and just to become more confident for whether you're stepping back in after a weekend or after a holiday, and just being able to have some sense of control over a situation, or to empower a young person to control the difficulties that they're facing as well.
Yeah, I think too, some of the teachers find themselves in posts. Either they kind of ended up working in a school for children with additional support needs, or they found themselves working in a support for learning department. And kind of, on Friday, in a secondary school, on Friday I was a French teacher, and on Monday I'm a support for learning teacher. And suddenly my colleagues think I've learned, a ton of stuff on Saturday and Sunday in order to become the support for learning teacher. And the truth is they haven't, they were still a French teacher on Friday. And many of them come, I think, as you say, just to gain that extra knowledge. And one of the first things we do in the first course is to say, tell me why you're here and what you hope to get out of this. And, are you a volunteer? Are you a conscript? Were you sent by your school, or did you want to come? And many of them will say, it's about increasing my own professional knowledge and practice. We hope by the end that they've done that, and certainly the feedback we get from them would suggest they have. And indeed, many have gone on to promoted posts, not because necessarily you came with a view to going on to a promoted post, but in fact, I suppose I'm a bit of an example of that myself. I think when you go and study, sometimes it shakes your roots a wee bit. And you start to think, what else is out there?
And I'm wondering how you support the learners in your courses. I might be off wide off the mark here, Margaret, but anecdotally, you alluded to it earlier, there's real budget pressures and real workplace pressures for many working with pupils with additional support needs just now. Seems to be a lot of frustration out there that we're just not being able to do our jobs properly in certain quarters, and that must be difficult for these teachers to then commit themselves, or maybe I don't know, it gives them a renewed passion to actually try and become more involved in the sector, and maybe even get a kind of political insight. But yeah. I'm just wondering how you's in difficult circumstances, as I say, as far as I can see, how do you then support them to actually succeed in the course and to be able to find space and time in their lives to commit to this deep study?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to say that the teachers that I'm working with and have worked with year on year, hugely committed individuals. And I mean, I kind of joke there about your conscript or volunteer. And, some of them have waited 2 years to get on the course. They've been desperate to come, and just either personal circumstances haven't been right, or, funding or whatever. But anyway, they kind of get there. And, that kind of whole motivation to learn is a huge thing. The university, we try to be as sympathetic as we can be to people's circumstances, and we very much, when we're setting deadlines and so on, it's with school term dates in mind. It's with end of term and NABs and school plays, nativity plays, and all that kind of thing. And so sometimes we'll quite often negotiate as far as we can within the university regulations. We negotiate when is a reasonable time, length of time for them to submit their assignments and so on. We also support them by we have tutorials, obviously, with them, seminars and things, and online support. And we also comment on their written work. They do send us drafts to comment on, because some teachers haven't written anything more than kind of postcards and report cards for years. So when you're saying, well, you're going to write a 4,000-word assignment at master's level, that can be quite scary. And one of the things they'll often say to us is afterwards, not in the middle of it, but afterwards they'll say, gosh, it's been really important to be reminded how young people feel when they're learning. And they kind of get that sense of what it's like when you're sitting in a class. And I guess they take some of that experience back into their own classrooms as well, and sometimes tailor support for their pupils differently because of their own experiences. So,
and you're telling us about the optional courses, the fantastic titles, and can you give us a couple of examples of assignments or dissertations that have kind of blown you away?
Blown me away. Well, there's actually been quite a few. Well, another course we have actually at the end of the diploma phase, they do a practitioner inquiry, which is a kind of an 8,000-word piece. And there's been some really, really interesting work done there, looking at things like nurture groups. How inclusive are the ideas of nurture groups? They've looked at, there's so many to choose from. They've also looked at individual children. So they've taken children and tracked them and looked at how they've progressed and actually kind of worked with them, kind of an intervention type thing, and then monitored and tracked that. Some of them have rolled that then out across the school. We've had some that have looked at the whole issue of inclusion embedded across the system. So they've looked at initial teacher education, NQTs, and then on into that kind of advanced professional, and looked at how do we embed inclusion across a whole system. There's a whole range of things. Very much, we don't set questions in our assignments. They're not answering a statement or answering a question, because we believe passionately that it has to be applicable for where you are, and we don't know what circumstances everybody works in. And so there are broad themes, there are clearly learning outcomes they have to write towards. But what they choose to do, and that's partly about your own motivation and your own agency over your own learning, as Bruner would say. So the teachers choose what they want to look at, and it's something that's very relevant and very meaningful to them and in their own professional development as well.
That's great. And just coming to the end of tonight's show, and if you maybe give us a few links in a moment if we want to find out more information about the course. But just another question from Paul, and I'll kind of paraphrase. You were talking about trust and such like has been very important from the early stage of building up a relationship with a class. How else might your average teacher make their classroom more inclusive?
Well, I think again, I mean, it does come back to really, it comes back, I think, to how you deal with children, mm-hmm. how you support children. If you're constantly thinking about how can I meet their needs, what is it that child is doing, how and where do I want them to be, how do I get them there, by looking out for them, by looking at them holistically, looking at the whole child, finding out about what they're doing out in the playground as well as when they're in sitting in front of you in your classroom, getting them to know them as a person. I think there's all of that kind of thing lays the ground for a child feeling, because inclusion's partly about how you feel. If you feel included, I think it's important that children know that you want them to be there in your classroom. Sometimes when I was a behaviour support teacher, I used to think, gosh, I'm not sure if the message that child is getting is that they're wanted here.
Uh-huh.
It's almost as though they want them out. that's if you've got a feeling that nobody else wants you there, then that's not going to be terribly inclusive. So I think there's something about how we help children to feel included, and to help them to be included, and that can be hard. Some children, it seems as though it's almost easier to include some than others, but that's not an option for a teacher. We need to think about how we work with all children, because all children are important.
And just finally for myself, the Children and Young Person Scotland Act, there's a lot of press, shall we say, around the kind of rights of the child, the role for the Commissioner for Children and Young People, and the talking about a lot of chatter around the provision of named persons and a child's plan. So, I mean, without going into the Act in any great detail, it's available online for people to see themselves. But again, for your kind of classroom teacher in Scotland, coming up to a break or maybe early into 2015, what should we be reading around? What should we be making ourselves aware of? That what might be kind of game changers or might have a significant impact on our practice and our, suppose, future professional learning needs?
Well, I mean, I suppose one of the things that we're still looking at the moment is GIRFEC. And what does GIRFEC actually mean? Working together, Shinari, working across health, etc.
Yeah.
And then linking that, obviously, to the named person and all the rest of it. And I noticed that when the First Minister took up her new position, one of the things she said she's wanting to relook at is additional support for learning and giving more rights to children. Now, I don't know, I haven't been able to find out any more detail about that. I've heard rumours about the coordinated support plan shifting and changing. So I'm kind of horizon scanning to see what all of that might mean for us in practice. I'm not sure that I'm going to direct you to anything in particular, but I am going to say keep your eyes open, because I think there are things coming that I think we need to be looking at and to be ready for and ready to respond to. And I think that's one thing. It can be, again, you hooked into your classroom. I think getting teachers to engage with and respond to these things and not simply see them as, oh, this is what I've got to do, but to ask hard questions about them as they are being thought about and brought to fruition. We've got teachers know things, and teachers are good people to ask questions about and to say, how will this work in practice and what is different and what does it mean? So I would encourage teachers just to try and keep abreast of what is coming and taking it from there.
And just before you head off, Margaret, you mentioned the Scottish Teacher Education Committee Inclusion Group.
Yes.
What other networks are you part of, and you seem to have featuring a number of websites, so just could you leave us with a couple of places to go and search online
for
anything? I mean, obviously you mentioned about Able Pupils as well, so what would be your kind of top couple of links for things that you're involved in?
Couple of links for practical stuff for teachers doing in their classroom. I would suggest the website called NRich. It's a capital N with the word rich, hosted at the University of Cambridge, and it's a mathematics website, and it will do all your pupils. I'm saying it's good for able pupils, it is, but it's actually just good for all pupils, and it covers preschool right up to secondary as well, and it's interactive. You can send in results of they set a problem thing, and you can send it in to them, but there's lots of stuff for teachers to download, for the children to work at. Part of it was certainly linked to Curriculum for Excellence, although the first bit you see is all key stage, blah, 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 for England. But in many ways, I would actually be suggesting for all learners, forget the age and stage thing and actually just go for what topics you think would be interesting for children. So that's a superb website. What else is good? Gosh, there's so many now. That's actually almost a problem. There are so many. Where do you send people to? But they're certainly a good maths one for you to go to. And there's actually, from the Scottish Network for Able Pupils website, there's other links to other websites for good stuff. And the stuff there, don't let the fact it's on the Scottish Network for Able Pupils website put you off. It's just good for everybody. There's good stuff in there. And there's lots of good stuff, actually, on the Education Scotland website as well. Good ideas and good links from there too.
Yeah, and the web address for your inclusive education course is incredibly long. So what we'll do is just make sure we put a link on the EduTalk website along with
Glasgow University Inclusive Education. information.
Of course.
And also, I'll tell you what I would point you to as well, everybody, to would be the new, we've just reproduced, that's what our meeting on Friday was about, the new inclusion, national framework for inclusion. And we've linked it all to the new standards for teachers. So it's been revamped and updated. The website's not updated yet, but you can access it. If you go onto the old website, as it were, and scroll right down, the new updated framework is there. And it's, we would argue, a great place for schools that are thinking about this whole area of inclusion. Lots of questions there at different stages, the initial teacher education right through for managers and head teachers and so on, to really think and grapple around this whole area of inclusion and inclusive pedagogy and so on.
Sorry, Margaret, is that on the STEC website?
It's on, if you type into Google National Framework for Inclusion, it should come up with a link.
Fantastic. We'll have to look at that later on this evening.
That's a good tool. Not the what you see there is the kind of old one, but the new one is, we're just in the middle of getting that all updated, and that's what our meeting was about on Friday. We had a good meeting with all the TEIs.
Fantastic.
There you go. Lots of stuff going on. Lots of stuff going on.
Thank you so much for joining us again.
Not at all.
This evening, Margaret.
I wish you and all your listeners a very peaceful time over the festive season, whatever you're all up to. Get time to relax and recharge the batteries.
Absolutely. And best wishes for 2015.
And you. Thank you very much, David.
Take care.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Margaret.
Bye-bye. Bye.